This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
And the energy of what is out there. I do think it's worth noting there are some legacy institutions that a lot of people think of when they think about the arts in San Diego. But that's not what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about other stuff. What else is going on in San Diego? So, Susana, I want to start with you. You promote and sponsor events that pull together a variety of kinds of arts, dance, music, theater, visual arts, all those kinds of things. Your point is more collaboration than competition. And you've got some really strong feelings about this competition, collaboration, difficulty. So why that? Why is that where you're landing with Vanguard Culture?
So I started the organization 10 years ago. After living many lives in the arts, I started in the theater. I'm a jazz vocalist. I had a band. I was doing gigs here in downtown San Diego. And then through a series of happy accidents, I became a curator for the Airport Authority. And I curated 80 exhibitions while I was there. Also curated their performing arts program. So all of a sudden, I was connected to all of these creatives, museum professionals, film, theater, dance, visual arts, all these folks. And the one thing that I realized is no one's talking to each other. Everyone's living in their own little silos, and everyone's fighting for the same little piece of pie at the Commission for Arts and Culture. And I kept hearing the same things over and over again. Number one is, you know, resources. Lack of resources. You know, I'd often get an opportunity where I'd have a film festival director say, hey, do you know a dancer who can do this one specific theme? And then I'd meet a dancer the next day that's like, do you know anyone with a projector? You know, and it happened to me so often that I'm like, how do I get these people in the same room together to share resources and collaborate and support one another as a collective creative community? So we started a series very casually, called the Foodie Soiree, where I was like, well, food will bring everybody together. We'll just get everybody to potluck style, bring some food, and then share their creativity. So it started very casual, where I said, you know, bring your guitar, bring your spoken word, bring whatever it is you're bringing, and then we'll just share and get these executive director, you know, level folks in the same room and talking to each other. And it slowly grew into something incredible where, you know, now it's turned into, for example, we had one in my house a couple of years ago, right before the pandemic, and I had the California Ballet performing in my living room. It's not a big living room, okay? In my living room with the director of a museum sitting on the floor on a pillow. So it was very casual, but very high at the same time. But the most important part was that they were talking to each other, that the collective creativity turned into, hey, I know that guy from that museum, even though I'm a film person. I can call him up now. I can call him up and say, hey, can I use your space? So that has now evolved into what is our organization, that we do arts journalism, we do professional development, but our events is what we're known for. We are very purposeful about bringing together communities that typically never intersect and getting them to work together, to share resources, and empower each other. Instead of having to all go rent a projector, borrow one from a colleague in the industries.
So Vanguard Culture is this, it hosts events, but it's also it's a electronic magazine. It's a website that you can find out what's happening. I've gone on your website several times and I thought, I had no idea this was happening in San Diego. So this is actually a question I will be addressing to all three of you is, how do we find out about what's going on here? Because there's a lot going on in San Diego. So props to you.
Thank you. And that's what we focus on. We focus, because of all those connections that we've built through the years, I'm now on everyone's email list. So thank you. But I focus on the Vanguard Culture of San Diego, the underground, quirky, funky, cool things going on versus the stuff that usually gets the most visibility.
All right. And so, Leah, let's talk to you. You've been involved in local arts scenes with with the Jacobs Center and with Escondido Center for the Arts, and now you're on the California Arts Commission, but you're not convinced we're very inclusive in how we do funding, in how we support it. So what's your beef there?
I wouldn't say that it's a beef. Now, I've spent 30 years in this arts community, and tonight is a little exciting because the County of San Diego Arts Commission launched itself. But you didn't go way back in my resume to know that I was the last executive director of the County Arts Council, which the Board of Supervisors at that point defunded. Okay? So when we talk about resources, and we have a new Board of Directors, supervisors at the county, we won't talk about that. And, they reinstated the commission because art is what matters. Art connects people, communities, educators. And so when we talk about resources and diversity and inclusion and all these buzzwords, if you go deeper into what's really happening, and we've been doing this at the California Arts Council and the new Arts Commission, and we're talking about racial equity, right? So racial equity isn't like you all get to apply for the grant, because the big people that you talk about have grant writers who get paid $90,000 a year, who are professionals, and the people that I work with, like Centro Cultural de la Raza and World Beat Center, are writing their grants on their kitchen tables in the middle of the darn night, and it's not equitable. It's not inclusion. So how do we shift the resources? And we're having this conversation at the state level. We give out $26 million of arts funding to all the arts with a guide toward equity and inclusion of all the arts and education, and it's not enough money. Like, that sounds like a lot of money, but it's really not enough money.
So actually, I want to ask you further about the World Beat Center, because it's sort of a metaphor, because the World Beat Center is run by volunteers. Yes. And then just up the hill a little bit, you've got museums and theaters and things like that.
We were having a lively conversation today, and there's this historic district. We have three cultural districts in our county, and there's 14 in the state. That says a lot about what's happening here, right? You know, we have Barrio Logan, Balboa Park, and Oceanside is also a cultural arts district, right? So that's exciting. But then when you look at being at the Balboa Park Advisory Council, and I'm talking to my friend, and he's saying, how do we bring in inclusivity? How does the park become more inclusive? And I said, well, there's this red line called the creek behind the Oregon Pavilion, which makes it impossible to get to our two organizations of color. And how do we pat ourselves on the back and say we're doing a good job? Centro Cultural is being run almost 100% by volunteers. It's a beloved, iconic building. Adrian, maybe you can accept it.
It's a fabulous
World Beat Center has been here for 30 years. They do not have a contract with the city. Let's just talk about that. That's the real. These are the facts. You can look them up. But what I'm saying is, so how do we say we're doing such a great job being collaborative? I think the arts by their nature are collaborative, and artists in their souls are collaborative, and that's why I felt so great to spend my 30 years here. But we have a lot of opportunity and a ton of work to do.
All right. That's helpful and it's useful. So, Adrian, it's so interesting to think, you came from UCSD.
Yeah, I was speaking of 1993, and John, and was friends with one of the taco shop poets. His wife, Alejandra, I think Juan C. Gomez, was married to Miguel Angel Soria, who was one of the taco shop poets, right? And in 1993, when UCSD TV started, I was just finishing up my undergrad degree at UCSD. Eventually, I went back into my community. I taught elementary school and was a substitute teacher, and then went back and got my master's degree in 2002, and eventually got my PhD at UCSD. So I'm all the way through UCSD in comparative literature.
But you were taking taco shop poetry out of what you wanted to, these sort of elitist coffee shops and into the taco shops. That's just a beautiful movement.
Well, the idea for us is, first of all, there weren't coffee shops. There weren't that many coffee shops in San Diego at the time. There was the Panakin in La Jolla, and then there was here down the street. There was 19G and a Java cafe here down the street. But there weren't places here for people to read, and it wasn't there at that point yet. So what we had decided as young students, Adolfo Guzman Lopez and myself and Miguel Ángel and eventually Tomás Riley, we actually got a grant from Come Back to the Centro, and David, you know, he's here, David Avalos, one of the folks that ran the Centro for many years, helped run the Centro with this with Veronica, his partner. They gave us a $250 grant to be able to do readings all over in San Diego, and yeah, we didn't want to do it in places. My idea was to do it in swap meets, and I actually still think that's a brilliant idea to do performances.
Poetry, spoken word, at swap meets. It's brilliant.
But Adolfo goes, no, let's go to the taco shops. And actually, down on the other side of Grocery Outlet, there was a little taco shop. Across the street was another. We did two readings on this street. The first one was at Los Panchos, which was literally diagonally across the street, and then Valentine's Taco Shop was here. And what we did at first, we had just roving crews of either young writers that had graduated from UCSD or USD or San Diego State. And we actually started, you know, using the space as a place of empowerment. We eventually had musicians, and then we started getting asked to do readings not just at UCSD or at taco shops. We would get asked to read readings at Columbia, at university, and different cultural centers in the West Coast, go to all the UC schools, UC Santa Barbara, UC Riverside, and then touring the United States and performing with Black Eyed Peas and doing work with Ozo Motley as well and sharing the stage with them. It became something that came out. And by the time we became older, by 2000, we realized the brick-and-mortar aspect was really an important part. And we decided that what we wanted to do was have a space, because we didn't want young artists to have to resort to the taco shop, to have a space where you could have artists. And we put our money where our mouths were. Every check that we got from an institution, we would take 25% and we would put it in the kitty. And so by the early 2000s, we had about maybe $3,000-$4,000. And we actually rented a space here on 9th and E called, we ended up calling it Voz Alta, out loud, aloud. To speak in Spanish, and Voz Alta means to speak out loud. And we made that the hub of arts in San Diego for about 5 to 10 years. But it really comes back to spaces and having spaces to produce artwork and to take chances in going to see something that you were not prepared to see. I brought this prop because I think that we're in danger of losing that. And Chancellor Kozla has actually brought this up in terms of how UCSD is trying to establish housing for UCSD students, employees, professors, outside of the campus, because we're growing, right? And how do we find it? This is an example. Over there at the other spot down the street is another example. But brick and mortar is still a part of our existence. And when we have, you know, 4.3 vacancy rates for young artists and musicians, and the average rate of paying the rent of $2,200 a month, I looked at one of the sites, I said, how much do artists get paid in San Diego? Well, artists get paid anywhere from $43,000 to $55,000 a year. That means that over 60% of their rent is covering, you know, basically their entire salary.
This is a really interesting point. So you're saying the housing problems, the rent problems in San Diego is having a direct impact
on the arts. And you see it I've sat on commissions grants where we have fantastic artists or writers for applying for things, but hey, this person would be great for this grant. But they don't live in city proper. Why? Because they've been priced out of city proper. When they move to IB or Chula Vista, or they move to Escondido, or they move to Spring Valley or El Cajon. And that's the reality that's facing every artist in San Diego.
Sure, sure. So Simon, let me go back to you for a minute. There's something kind of exciting coming up in September, right? That is going to showcase one of those "what else is out there" kinds of ideas, right?
Yes. First, I want to provide a little bit of context.
Sure.
So You all are living a very important moment in the history of arts and culture in San Diego right now. We are, I believe, on the cusp of a renaissance. It is a really, really exciting time to be here. With the creation of the reinstatement of the County Arts Council, the creative economy, information just came out that the creative economy is surpassing the California, all the other sectors of the California economy. $507 billion is the contribution that the creative economy provided to the state of California. That is not something to take lightly. We, for the first time, have a mayor and a full city council who are in support of increased arts funding. We are just got San Diego and Tijuana were just designated World Design Capital 2024. I mean, huge things are happening. Huge things are happening. And with this increased focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion, this is the moment to hold people accountable for all of that. So I want to put that in context and put that in the back of your mind that right now, big things are happening. Even if they're not front and center right now, behind the scenes, big things are happening. So we're so proud to be creating a visual and performing arts festival that is fully binational. This September 2nd, it is sort of a film. We're taking over two city blocks in Logan Heights on Commercial Street of warehouses, empty storefronts, vacant lots, and transforming them with film, theater, dance, visual arts, music, and transforming it for a one-day takeover. And we have creatives from both sides of the border. It's a really exciting initiative, and one of our strategic partners is the World Design Capital 2024, so we're really excited about that.
That's great. And I want you to give us your sense, Leah, also of what's happening, what's coming up, what should we be paying attention to?
Well, I think in concert with that is that over the last period of crazy time during COVID, the California Arts Council received $71 million of additional rescue response arts funding to go to artists. And that $71 million has turned into the Creative Catalyst Fund, the Far West Border North Fund, and the idea that's circled back around, and I know Susanna will agree with me, is that we're funding artists. We're actually finding artists and giving them the funds to create so they can apply for grants from $5,000 to $50,000. They're called emerging artists, legacy artists. We have five legacy artists here in San Diego who received a legacy art grant last year. And so there's this really great movement. And the thing that I, because I've been around for 30 years, worry about is sustainability. How do we sustain that? How do I watch the California Arts Council go from $71 million to $26 million, knowing we're in a deficit year? And, you know, I just was appointed in January, so in my Senate Rules Committee, I said, and how am I going to make sure, you know, what do I care about? You guys not saying, oh, we're in a deficit year and you're going lower, because we've made these relationships, and the arts are about relationships, right? So we've built relationships, we've supported these artists, we've messed up their taxes, and how are we going to make sure that we, you know, continue to build. So I think that all these seeds that are planted, we have that moment to watch them grow. That's.
Can I follow up on that?
Of course.
So I think that's just it, is holding them accountable to how do you sustain this. And I think in the past, people have focused, and I want to speak to like the bigger picture of tourism in San Diego, right? So we want cultural tourists to come to San Diego. We have,
what do you mean by that? People come to San Diego for the beaches.
Right. So a cultural tourist is someone who would come fly here or drive here from, you know, nearby states to spend money going to the opera, going to a big exhibition at a museum that they haven't, that they're excited about. Those types of tourists will likely go to a nice restaurant that evening and, you know, go to a museum the next day or stay at a nice hotel. And those TOT dollars directly fund the Commission for Arts and Culture. When you are promoting San Diego as this sleepy beach town and going hiking and surfing and all the things, that's fantastic because we really do have the best weather in the country. But Well, those folks are probably staying at an Airbnb. They're probably going to have lunch and have a couple tacos by the beach, have a beer, and they're not spending the type of money that needs to be spent here in San Diego for those TOT dollars to really make an impact. We only get almost a penny of that per dollar of the TOT dollars. The rest of it goes to the city for infrastructure projects and pothole filling and homelessness and all the things that we need to take care of. So we really should be thinking on a bigger scale. And I think because this is why I'm excited that we have a mayor and a city council who are supporters of the arts for the first time in the history of San Diego, that they're all supportive of the arts. That's why it's exciting, because it's time to think bigger. Like, what is the bigger visionary transformative change that you can make? And there's lots of ways to do that. That's not just funding. It's also resource sharing, right? So there's, the city has dozens and dozens of buildings that are unused. And see, and artists need arts residencies and locate right places to perform. So how can we think in a different way where we're pitching and promoting San Diego as a cultural destination first and impacting it through on a citywide level and impacting it through funding and resource sharing?
Adrian, I think you have an idea of how this could happen.
Well, I mean, it really is going to take the level of private-public partnerships. Like, one of the things I've done, I mean, I'm so serious about art. I'm 7 to 10 years away from retirement. And my wife and I took a plunge, and we bought a couple cafes up in Union Free City Heights area called Twigs Coffee House and Bakeries.
The irony there being you wanted to get out of the coffee houses,
yeah,
into the taco shops, and now you own the coffee house.
I get sucked back. But what it did, give me the more brick-and-mortar space that I needed with the green room next door to it, right, where I can host poetry readings, I can have visual arts events, and the other space can be used for music. But we need the support in terms of business or cooperation with institutions to fund that, to be able to make it world class, right? And the other part too, I think that's important to consider, that we have really good models here in San Diego. I mean, if you look at Adams Avenue Street Fair, it's done what we're intending to do with this space in terms of get UCSD out into the community and arts out into the community. And it's been doing it for 35, 40 years, right? And you go to the concerts there and you see everyone. You see working class bodies. You see upper class bodies. You see everyone enjoying it. You probably get one of the best curated performance venues over the course of 2 days in San Diego. It reminds me kind of like a street scene back in the day, right?
Right.
And this is produced by Scott Kessler and Steve Cater religiously over the last 15, 20 years. That's something that works. That's something that UCSD can choose to replicate in different ways to be able to bring it out. And then coming back, funding places like the Central as well, and we're talking about equity. We know what's happening as artists. The average age of the patron goer at any museum has now reached about 73 years of age. How are we going to create new patrons for the arts? Because otherwise, the arts will die. And this is something that, to me, is really, really important about funding real arts in school, giving critical thought into how we groom artists, how we develop artists. What is an artist statement? What is an artist talk? Where can we have, and this is back in the day, we used to have this tier where you had community galleries, and then you had intermediate galleries that would kind of groom you and actually work with you to get your artist statement, to get you prepped to be able to move to larger galleries. And that doesn't exist anymore precisely because of the lack of brick and mortar, right? And then there's the institution way off in the sunset, right? And there's very little exchange between the two to be able to give folks the chops, the experiences, the cachet that they need to be able to become regional artists, national artists, and international artists. Los Altos, that I talked about, was not just a bunch of scrubs that were kids just goofing around. As David pointed out to me earlier, this week, he was like, you think of Noé Olivas, right? He's an artist that was exhibited for the first time at Voz Alta. All of a sudden, decides to kind of talk to the artist about his work. They give him some advice. It functions as an intermediary space. So then he goes to the institution. He's featured in the New York Times. And this is part of my work. Another person that was there was Ruben Ochoa. Is a person that is from Oceanside, is part of our community, grew up around families that had restaurants, used his family's van to create, of all things, a portable, movable gallery. He outfitted it's like a tiny home. Instead of a tiny home, it's a tiny gallery. And he would actually exhibit artwork all over California with this. that work went to LACMA. That work has been in premier art shows, and he's exhibited in the Venice Biennale as well. That starts small, but it needs that intermediary step to groom, to support, and help them reach the international level.
And your belief is that schools, universities, community colleges can be that intermediary.
The founding person for me coming up as a writer, those of you that are in Lit at UCSD, it's a famous, famous program. The Lit program at UCSD had Herbert's Hippopotamus. Who's Herbert? Everybody knows, Herbert Marcuse. And from Herbert Marcuse, we had this genealogy of writers that actually Quincy Troup, Rosaura Sanchez, Frederick Jameson, Pasquale Berdicchio, Carlos Blanco Aguinaldo. Let me go down the list of these, the most important writers, I would argue regionally, right? And we were groomed by the best. So when people came at you and said, you understand poetry? Well, I kind of have an idea, you know? And this is something that can be developed, but are we investing in getting that baller kind of writer that we could be a great instructor, that could bring other writers into town? Are we looking at how to make this happen in the schools? And I mean, we're having real fine artists in schools teaching students how to be able to work with the plastic arts and literature and music. We have it in music a little bit with the Young Lions and Gilbert Castellanos, another artist that came out of the gallery that we first started in San Diego, down the street at 16th Street and Broadway. It was a little gallery during the 1990s called El Campo Ruz. That's where Gilbert Castellanos would come down and do his out late jazz session. And now he's hosting the Jacobs at the Jazz and at the Rady Show. We are not in lack of artists. What we are in lack of is support structures to make sure that our artists get access. Brick and mortar, space. These are the most important parts of it. And what we have here is space. Now we have the virtual space, the visual space.
Right.
I think we have to work together to be able to build it up in an equitable way.
So, Leah, tell us about the Live Well project.
You know, and art lives everywhere. So I am, I have my own company. I've been on my own for the last 7 years. And I recently received a contract for the County of San Diego Southeastern Live Well Center. And I sat with the public art community. They said, well, we want community artists. We really want our artists. We want BIPOC artists. We want community artists. Well, I was just talking about how, you know, in an interesting turn of events in the last 2 years when arts organizations and the California Arts Council started earmarking funds for Black, Indigenous people of color in their Cultural Pathways program, saying, let's give these people $30,000. Let's waive the match. Let's get rid of some of the barriers that have happened for small art organizations. And then legal came down and said, you can't do that. You cannot have a culture and a dollar amount attached to each other, right?
Prop 209.
Echoes of Prop 209.
So, you know, I jump into the California Arts Council and they're getting rid of the Cultural Pathways program. I'm like, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
But, and we're changing it and we're adapting it and we're still finding ways for small, we're talking, but it's like language again, right? So it's historically underrepresented or using the healthy index. But it's important. It's important because we haven't shifted. We've connected, but not enough. We've supported, but not enough. We don't, and so that's working. So the Live Well Center, the committee said, we want to say BIPOC in the criteria. I'm like, oh no, we're not going to do that. But how do we then represent the artists? So our criteria said we wanted artists with roots in the community. And so this building, it's a county building, it's a Live Well Center, Health and Human Services, all those things that you need. It's at Market in Euclid, it'll open in August. It has a $300,000 art collection with 41 artists. 40 of them are artists of colors. Why? Because they had roots in the community, and that was our criteria. I believe it will be the first public art collection that is 95% artists of color. And we have the best of the best in this city. We have Wendy Mariam, museum quality artist. I had to work with her. I'm in New York. I'm here or there. Victor Ochoa. So it's beautiful. It'll open August. They'll have art tours. But it's just a way of how do you do inclusive? How do you celebrate a community by lifting up their artists?
Would you thank our panelists for this tonight?
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.